Accession number 27188, Reel 3.
Hammer, Reel 3. You were discussing political relations in Project Hub.
Yes, they didn't have any man or person who was responsibility for this military civilian to deal with that problem or project. So I can remember that one of the first questions I got when I came there was from drivers who were throwing away destroyed food. And they experienced, of course, that a lot of people were coming and picking up this food afterwards. So they wanted to maybe to give it the food that was useful anyway to the population, but they were not allowed to do that in the beginning. So what I had to do then, of course, was to make an arrangement that we were connected to like local Red Cross and kind of soup station. It was a lot of this soup kitchen still in the Serb Republic, and I think it was three of them in Motrica and then in the area. So we were making a system that we made a connection through the civilian to the local Red Cross, and we're driving out the food that was still possible to eat to this kitchen or to some mental hospital, and also helping some with water supplies and things like that. So in the beginning I was quite occupied with that.
This is more of a negotiating function, isn't it, than a religious function?
Yes, of course it is a function like to better the relation between the locals and us. And also a kind of welfare thing for the soldiers, I guess. Like they feel they are, have a feeling that they are doing what is possible. Because they were not, they disliked very much to throw away food and what they were experienced. And that they saw that the local population were kind of taking that afterwards.
How did you find the local political leaders to deal with? Were they reasonable men to deal with?
Yes, I guess so. I was not dealing directly so much with that was, of course, not my subject. But my impression, talking with them, planning with them, that was they wanted us to be there. Because they were, of course, earning money also. And, of course, it was important for them to get as much help as possible.
What was their long-term aim, do you think? Because they had created this separate little Serbian state within the Federation. And what did they think that could go on forever, or were they thinking...
I think they were just... kind of accepting the Dayton Agreement. I don't think they were much more happy than on the other side.
So no one was really happy?
No one was happy.
What about the Serbian Orthodox clergy in Modrica? Did you have anything to do with them?
Yes, I did have talks with Orthodox priests and clergy. We were trying to help them in some small things. For me, it was just nice to talk with them, to have company with them. I was visiting, and also a person in my unit had possibility to visit the services, of course. We were also borrowing the church, having ceremonies like for Christmas and other days.
Did you find that they had a political outlook, or were they concerned only with religious matters?
I think, like the mullahs we talked about from Tuzla, they were very different. From this priests didn't talk so much about political ideas or whatever. We are not discussing that so much. More religious affairs and the conditions in the era. So I think I think that the priests and religious leaders in the era was very different, like them, like the other persons. But I was attending some meetings in the area with an American chaplain in lead, in charge for that. The meeting between Orthodox priests, Catholic priests, and Muslims leaders. And the most difficult thing was, of course, to get the Muslim leaders to come, because all of them were not allowed from the political leaders.
Were the Muslim leaders under more political control than the Serbian Orthodox and the Catholic priests?
In my opinion, it was like that. But I really don't know. That's just my impression.
When these religious leaders did meet, what were they discussing? What were the subjects that they considered?
A lot of discussions about building up churches that was destroyed from the other parts. Having kind of connection, just be the talk like they did before. And it was also a lot about families visiting the other side, so it was kind of how to help people to live, also to help them if they had to visit some friends that stayed in the other part of.
So this is liaison and welfare?
Yes, in a lot of that, and also of course about the church buildings and things like that, but also making friendship again, I guess, was one of the ideas by these things.
Had they been friends before the war had started?
A lot of them, yes.
Were they willing to restore friendly connections?
Yes, they were talking, shaking hands. It was no problem at all with that. But of course, they were having a lot of different experiences. And I guess they have heard different stories about the situation. They were, of course, also, I guess, some of them, they were living with their own people, so it's, of course, they have maybe different stories of the same situation.
Were you conscious of there being a great deal of hostile propaganda from the various communities towards each other?
It was very easy to see, because the Serb could talk about accident happening when a Serb was killed in the Croatian area, for instance. And then, in fact, maybe it was not so much happening. And the same way around. So it was a lot of these stories and rumors going on.
Was there anything that could be done to stop that or to reduce it?
Of course, it was possible to find out what was actually happening, I think the rumors were still living. This is just the same, like this, especially can see in Kosovo also. It's, and I guess in all other in all these situations.
While you were in Moditra, were there any serious incidents concerning the battalion?
Yes, it was some accident. It was very close to being a disaster, of course, with cars turning around, car accidents, and things like that. But nothing happened when I was this year. I was attending in Moditra. I didn't lose anyone. Mm.
Did you find that the, you know, during that year the attitude of the soldiers changed at all? Was it consistent?
It changed very much because the situation was much more calm than, for instance, during the UN period. It was after a while almost like you had the camp in Norway. So it was possible, for instance, to go to Belfort trips to Croatia, to Hungary. Even we were twice in Belgrade visiting the demonstrations. So that was stopped. But still, we could go much more. It was possible to be around in the area in a quite different way from the way we could in Tuzla.
Was it safe for soldiers to go into Moditra?
Yes, completely. Mm.
So they were all right. Did they get on well with the local population?
Yes, yes, they did. It was very friendly cooperation. Like, I guess, more and more all over Bosnia and Herzegovina in some...
So things were improving?
Yes, in many ways it was. But still it was very obvious to see the big change between the Federation side and the Serbian side. Because they, it was much more better conditions on the Federation side. Going very slowly forward at the Serb side.
You came back from Bosnia in January 97, I think.
Yes, that's true.
What do you think you have learned from your experience there?
I learned very much about the Balkan and the situation there. I think I learned quite a lot about UN operations and the difference between that and NATO. I was learning quite a lot about different nationalities serving together. We were serving in a Nordic Polish brigade in... We were staying in an American area. So I had a very close connection to chaplains all around. In Tuzla, for instance, we were being there when the Americans came in, so I was cooperating quite a lot with the American chaplains coming in the beginning. So also, because of all these connections, I was learning and looking at a lot of different nationalities and how they were attending and doing their services.
How did the Norwegian way of doing things compare to the American way?
Quite a lot.
What was different then?
For instance, in the beginning, like the American came to Tuzla, they were prepared for war, of course. And when I was visiting them together with an American Catholic priest, they were staying like they were in the middle of a war era, like we were going around almost with any fear. So that was a very big clash in a way. But still, it was a very big difference in the command system. One other example from Tuzla before we moved was a very slippery. It was extremely slippery, and the Americans were closing the gate. No one should go out. But our truck drivers had equipment for this, and it wouldn't be any problem for doing that. But the gate was locked until the commander on the top said it is okay, they can go out, and it took several hours to do that. And that also other things, for instance, when we should pass a bridge between Croatia and Serbia or Serb Republic, it was not very easy for a local commander in the American army to take responsibility for things that were about his kind of responsibility. I think we have a lot more of possibility to take this shortcut in the Norwegian army. But of course the American are more they are working with their area, for instance, and are professional about that.
Yes.
We are more doing maybe with a lot of more things, but anyway, I guess the American are more used to high intensity fights, but we are more used to kind of this earlier UN operations and more peace support.
What about the American chaplains? Were they doing the same kind of work as you were doing? Did they have the same approach to it?
Yes, very much. That's for sure. They were not allowed to do so much work or to go around like we did. They were not allowed to have contact with the local population in that way. So that was a problem for them in the beginning. And the regulations were much more harder for them because they needed more security with four cars, for instance, than we were just driving one or two at that moment anyway. But they were doing very much of the same things. And I think our chaplaincy is in many ways very much alike the American system.
And what about the Poles? How did you get on with them and what were they like?
The biggest problem with them were the language.
Ah.
Because a lot of them didn't talk English very well.
Mm.
So when I met the first Polish chaplain, he was also a translator because he was very good in English. And he, and not all of his commanders. So, but the Polish officers who did talk English good, they managed very good in my experience.
Was their approach to operations more like your approach or more like the American approach?
You were thinking about Polish chaplain or...?
Well, the Polish battalion.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know.
What about the chaplains? Were they running the same kind of system as you were? Could they go and talk to the local?
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah.
Mm.
So they were freer than their American equivalent?
Yes, I think almost everyone else was. Of course, it was like the American in Bosnia was very occupied with security for their own forces.
Yes.
And that's, of course, a political situation. Because it was, for us in Tuzla, it was very exciting to wait for the American to decide if they should come or not, if Clinton was had the support or not. So of course, I think it was very important for Bosnia that NATO came in 96. Yes. That was, in my experience, that was mission was a very big success. And they were, of course, very occupied with not losing any man. And of course, that's the reason for the restrictions.
Yes, but it reduces effectiveness as well. If you're too concerned about security, then you can't do anything.
Yes, that's true. I think they were too much concerned about that. Mm. It was not necessary anyway in that period, I think.
Yes.
Because still UN and a lot of forces had been there before. And this was also after an agreement that all parts had been agreed in. So, but of course, anyway, I think I understand that the American soldiers are more it's more difficult for them because I guess they have more enemies than, for instance, Norway when they are being abroad.
Yes. And less experience of peace support.
Yes, that's for sure. They are not prepared for that. But I think the most important thing in Bosnia was to be there with a lot of force. Because it was not so many persons who were willing to fight anymore. So that was functioning.
Now, after you'd come back, you were back here at Kriegsholm, I think, and then...
No, I was going back to the Signal Army Regiment.
You went back to Signal Regiment. Mm. But then you you went out in August last year to... August 2003, you went to Afghanistan. What was the mission that you were on there?
I was a chaplain for the Norwegian forces in Afghanistan, and we were a part of ISAF-4, it's a security and assistance force in Kabul.
And again, how much did you know about what was going on in Afghanistan before you went? Join ISAF.
I did know quite a lot, of course, about what happened after the September 11th and the war against terrorism and all this military aspect of that. I didn't know quite so much about Afghanistan as a country and what it was like. So I was, of course, trying to read something and prepare in that way. But Afghanistan is, of course, much more different from Norway than Bosnia is. This is more like Middle East. Very far away. But we were very few Norwegian in the beginning. In Kabul. After some month, we also had an infantry task force, like Telemark task force was coming.
What was the situation in Afghanistan when you arrived? You arrived in Kabul, and what was your first impression when you arrived?
Kabul, in many ways, are a kind of secure era, because it's a lot of forces in there, and also they had a lot of checkpoints around the city with local police and military. But of course, Afghanistan is a very unstable country, and has been there for all their history. So staying in Kabul is maybe not, I maybe haven't seen so much about Afghanistan in that way. You also had one unit in the Enduring Freedom, staying at Bagram, the Special Forces. But they were moving back just some weeks after I was arriving.
And what were the Norwegian forces doing?
We had a surgical unit at the airport. We had a CIMIC team. And this Norwegian contingent commander and his staff. So, and also some staff members in different places. But, and then of course, Thermal Battalion and the task force was coming. So after they arrived, we were about 300 Norwegians.
What was the role of the Telemark force then? What were they supposed to do?
In the beginning, they had to being involved in this Lower Hauge in the making of the new constitution of Afghanistan. So they had one platoon staying at that era for quite a long time. So it was a kind of reaction force if something should happen. They were not involved in the kind of very close protection for that meeting, but they were a kind of reaction force if things should happen. So, and after that, they had a role in they should take the responsible of two districts in the inner town in Kabul, with I guess almost 1 million inhabitants.
So a lot of inhabitants to look after.
Yes, in Kabul it is about 3 million now. I think before it was a city about 600 or 700 people, so it's a lot of refugees, a lot of people gathered.
What was the condition in Kabul?
It was very obvious that a lot of things were destroyed. You can see it on roads, buildings. And all over. But still, it was, I guess it was enough of food. So the people were looking healthy in a way.
Where were you staying? Were you in reasonable accommodation?
We were staying in an engineer camp. It was, and it was an old Russian barracks. And the barracks were a lot damaged, but they were prepared, and it was very okay.
Did you ever feel unsafe or threatened while you were in Kabul?
Mostly I felt secure. But of course it was a lot of